cliffcentral.com.
That time of year, it's the recap, the review, the re-everything basically around sports. This week, as promised, we've got the big rugby show. Pretty dog shit year, actually, 2016, all things considered. Now, I put quite a bit of prep into this show, so I'm glad you're here with me. I've got a special guest as well, who I'll introduce in a sec. But this year has not been a good year for rugby, whether it was the start of Super Rugby all the way through to basically the box looking, well, more limp than basically a Mario biscuit that's been around a dorm room for too long. It was not a good year any way you look at it, any way you try to shape it. But you know what? Holidays are here. You're going to be chatting about rugby with your friends. So let me give you lots and lots and lots of ammo to get through all of this. And maybe together we can find some solace in the fact that there's always next year and things will only get better. So where to start? Well, I'm glad you asked. We're going to start with, I've got, like I said, lots and lots of prep here. We're going to try to jam everything into an hour. So we're going to start off with basically a snapshot of all the happenings. So if I can't sell you on the show in the first 5 minutes, well, then you can tune out. But trust me, there's so much to get into. Right, let's start off with Super Rugby. The Hurricanes win Super Rugby. The Lions make the final, offering SA fans something to cheer about as the rest of the teams were very, very dismal. Then we had England winning the Six Nations. They went unbeaten through there. Under new coach Eddie Jones, this guy, well, he did absolute wonders for this team, didn't he? They couldn't get out of their own pool in the World Cup, right? And people made a big deal of this, and rightly so, because firstly, it was in England. And everyone thought, this is so embarrassing for England. They can't win. Stuart Lancaster's only ever given them, you know, the Bridesmaids award in the Six Nations. But then something really, really, really big and instrumental happened for England.
Unfortunately, today I have some bad news for you. When I started with the Stormers, I never envisaged this opportunity had come forward. And so whilst I'm excited about the opportunity to coach England, I'm very disappointed about leaving the Stormers.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. I got lots of pounds. Okay, so remember that happened, huh? That was a very big thing because the Stormers' big loss was England's game. So they went into the Six Nations and they kind of blew everyone away. Right, after that, New Zealand completely dominated everyone in the rugby championship. They won most of their games by about 20 points and above. And then they went on to set the 18 consecutive test wins, which was the new world record. And, well, it was always one of those things. Which New Zealand team is going to do this? They were dicking around at 14 for so many years, and then they got to 15, 16, 17, 18, and then they actually lost on the 19th test match against Ireland in Chicago. In the Currie Cup, the Cheetahs, well, they basically went from playing in the Super Rugby and being rather woeful to then having the exact same team and doing bloody well in the Currie Cup. So, luck of the draw, I guess. The Lions have been doing this for the last couple of years. That this time around, their players got picked for the box. So, yeah, Cheetahs dominated the Bulls in the Blue Bulls in the final, and there we go, unbeaten in that one. Fiji reigned absolutely supreme in the World Sevens. They won the World Series. The Blitzboks just never took the opportunities during last season. I say last season because, of course, we're already well into this one. Blitzboks doing a lot better. And they won the gold at the Olympics. So it was a really good year to catch some form. Every 4 years, if you can do that, then basically that's the pinnacle. So good on Fiji and their players. Obviously, it was the biggest moment in Fiji. I mean, like the guy, the coach that, I forget his name, I think it's Ben Ryan. He was given like an honorary chiefdom or something. He was given land. I'm pretty sure he was given virgins too. But it was something like that. I mean, the guy got a lot. After that, well, worst Springbok team in living memory, basically. 4 wins out of 12. Alistair Garcia, he started with a loss against 14 Irishmen in Cape Town, which just sounds like a bad joke, but it was actually reality. And that's how it started. It didn't get much better after that. Limping all the way into a loss to Italy for the first time and a record loss to Wales. It was absolutely dreadful. But in England, they kind of round off... sort of being like the highlights of the year. That is it. They end the year being the only unbeaten team in all of the world of rugby. So that was quite a thing to kind of digest, and full credit to them. So England now have the opportunity to go and break the All Black record. So if they win through the Six Nations, they are 19 test victories. So that's the intro. I told you I'll sell you on that. Hey, look at that. That was all of 3 minutes or so. That's what we're going to unpack. And just to get into that, I'm now going to introduce my guest. So, as you know, I'm on Twitter a lot. If you don't follow me by now, then to quote Simply Red, you'll never, never follow me. But at Follow the Bounce, and I like chatting to people because I like the insights. I just do. It's raw. People show a lot of emotion, and there's never been more emotion than this year in rugby. Not that, I mean, you get the impression everyone's betting their houses on these games on Saturdays because they just feel so heartbroken and down when things don't go well. So I've got rugby journalist Keba Matwakai. Sorry, I should turn your microphone on.
Thank you.
So Keba's with us. Now, Keba is he's a rugby journalist. He works in new media. He does a hell of a lot of stuff. And I tell you what, of all the people I've spoken to on Twitter in the last month, he's a guy with some pretty cutting insights. So what I want to do with the rugby show, and it's the same I'll do with the cricket show and the other review shows for you, is I'm going to bring someone in, not so much as a co-host, but someone who's got really good insights to kind of, you know, just balance all this stuff. Because I don't like talking for an hour, and I'm pretty sure you don't like hearing my voice for an hour. It gets quite monotonous. So, Keba, just... I've given you the intro, what we're going to chat about today.
Yeah, thanks for having me anyway.
Well, thanks so much for coming. And you were dressed in a Stormers jersey, which means you A, have a sense of humor, or B, you are quite brave.
I was just being defined. It's been one of those years. I was just being defined.
Right. So, so you've obviously been through the highs and lows like everybody. Yeah. And unfortunately, like me, you've been through the highs and the lows, and you've got all the information as to why these things are probably happening. So I always feel like guys like us, we can't just laugh it off on a Monday.
Yeah.
Because we know that there's some big problems here. So when I chatted to you on Twitter, you kind of succinctly put it to me as what's wrong with this country's rugby right now? The things are in place. So I really like to touch on that with you.
Yep.
In just a bit. But we are going to start with Super Rugby. This was the first thing. So, you know, like the year always starts. It starts with a bit of a hangover. Obviously, people get into it's quite slow. Mm-hmm. I mean, guys are playing rugby in like 35 degree heats and all that kind of stuff. So we do ease into Super Rugby, but eventually when we get into it, it was pretty good. The Lions were on another level. It's as simple as that. They compared to the Sharks, who had lots of injuries.
Yeah, yep.
I mean, just to go through the teams, where were the major failings? The Sharks had injuries. They obviously had new coaches.
And an overly defensive, the thing is, when you look at it technically, it was an overly defensive approach to things. It worked in certain instances, but whenever they came up against an outfit that could unlock them, usually a Kiwi team, you know, that's when they became unstuck. They could impose themselves on the other South African teams, the other Australian teams. But the minute they met a team from New Zealand and the Lions, because the Lions turned them over twice, they embarrassed them in Durban and they embarrassed them, if I remember correctly, they blanked them in Ellis Park. I think they blanked them in Ellis Park. And you know what? The Sharks were very promising. They've got a promising group of players coming through. I mean, your Cohen Boshes, your Grant Esterhazens, Jean-Luc Dupriers.
17 different Dupriers brothers.
Yes, yeah. I actually don't remember which Dupriers brother is who. But,
I think Jean-Luc, he's the one that just made Jean-Luc, his Bok debut.
Sure. Jean-Luc. Yeah. And, yeah, well, it was a barely successful season for them. But we, in all honesty, we knew from the onset that the Lions were going to lead the charge for South African outfits.
So just to go through why other teams were so crap. Okay, so the Sharks were just quite one dimensional bully boys. The moment, as you said, the moment skill was thrown against their bulliness, they were unraveled.
Like, yep.
Stormers didn't play any New Zealand teams, so they had this false sense of grandeur.
And the Stormers have been regressing since the heady days of 2010, 2011, 2012, when they were the best team or the most balanced team in Super Rugby, they regressed. And I think they were at the bottom of a cycle in the season. And not much was expected of them. But when you looked at that draw, it was a very lovely draw. And I was like, at the most, we must get to the playoffs. Yeah. We got to the playoffs, but unfortunately we got humiliated. Oh, we got thumped by the Chiefs.
And that was the Stormers were the team for me that basically showed up a lot of shortcomings in the whole conference system. Firstly, how you can never play any New Zealand teams whatsoever. And secondly, how you can get into the playoffs and make a team like the Chiefs travel.
Sure.
I thought it was kind of insulting.
You know what? From a spectacle point of view, you just wanted to see the Stormers test themselves against a Kiwi outfit. I mean, there's not what's better than watching the Stormers take on the Crusaders at Newlands with all those Cape Crusaders going down to Waikato to take on the Chiefs. Because, I mean, the All Blacks, New Zealand is the leading rugby nation on earth, and you want to test yourself against the very best. Now, if you're being robbed of that opportunity up until the playoffs...
Good use of the word robbed, yes.
Yes. From a spectator's point of view, it was a bit of a letdown, that draw. But for my Super Brew, it was very nice because I could always say the Stormers are going to win, and then they'd lose.
They're playing like the Force and the Sunwolves
and the Kings twice, and the Sunwolves twice, Cheetahs twice.
But it's true, though. I mean, you say robbed because you don't learn anything through the tournament. You don't play against a good team and you go, well, you know what? Those guys were so dynamic. That's why we need to do this with our defense. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to do anything.
Sure,
They didn't react to anything. They knew they could just sort of grubber their way around things and they were there. The Cheetahs, probably not the squad to really be going at it. I mean, they started off against the Jaguares with a very ill-tempered match.
And
they couldn't even win that one. And they had like 13 guys in the field most of the game.
Sure. Well, the Cheetahs are South Africa's second team because of the lovely rugby that they play. Yeah. But unfortunately, on defense, their kicking game and their defense is just not of standard. And naturally, what's the point of scoring tries if you're going to concede more? So you knew from the onset that, you know what, the Cheetahs are going to struggle. But it's the Free State is a shopping aisle for either for the rest of the country. So you just get to see these players coming through. You'll expect to see the player at the Sharks because they're like the Sharks Academy. You'll see those players at some point in Cape Town or in Pretoria. Or Johannesburg. So not much was expected of the Cheetahs other than for entertainment value.
Sure, and of course, new coaching staff as well, very inexperienced and just finding their way.
After years of like mediocrity, I mean...
And then the Bulls, of course, similar kind of problem. There's not a lot of seniority. There's not a lot of leadership. Uh-huh. You could say, again, bottom of a cycle. Mm-hmm. And again, just frustrating because, I mean, if you look at all those teams, I don't think we need to just draw on too much of the Kings. We all know that they're issues. It's pretty obvious.
They were screwed.
I mean, going into the tournament, these guys, the players weren't getting paid.
Sure.
Cheeky Watson, I don't know what he's doing down there, but it was just rough. So again, all of that, but at least we had the Lions. And there's a couple of games that come to mind. Firstly, the way they absolutely killed the Bulls at Loftus. They absolutely murdered them.
Watched the game in which the Lions had actually won at Loftus in Super Rugby. I don't think I've ever seen that. And the way in which they did it.
Well, they hadn't prior to that game.
It was the first time ever, right?
Yeah.
And the rugby that they played. The manner in which the Lions played against most of South African teams showed how far behind. When a South African team is exposing other South African teams, that's when badly. Except, well, we'll get to it later, but that match between the Lions and the Stormers at Ellis Park, that was a very, very good game. It was like a test match. Because you got that feeling that a lot of players that day were auditioning for Springbok places.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And they put a showcase on.
Yeah, it really was it was my favorite South African match. We lost, but it was my favorite match of the season.
Yeah.
And it promised a lot, yeah.
Well, you know, they started off so well, the Lions did in Super Rugby. They went over to New Zealand. Mm-hmm. They beat the Chiefs away.
Yes.
Okay, they came a bit unstuck towards the end of the trip there. But then when it came to crunch time. When it came to crunch time, they were very good against Crusaders in the quarters. Clinical, it could be said.
I went to, you know, the things are bad when you look forward to watching a Lions game. I went with my mates to the Crusaders quarterfinal and the match against the Highlanders in the semis. My word, that stadium was rocking. And you just sensed it. You sensed that the Lions could do the Crusaders dirty. They had the momentum. They had the players who were in form. They had the game to trouble the Crusaders, that, which is very important. They had the game to trouble the Crusaders and the Highlanders. And, of course, there's that thing called altitude, which counted. And they those matches were evenly balanced up until probably halftime. And after that, just watching the Lions blow them away, blow the finest Kiwi teams on offer away, said, okay, these guys are the real deal. And after years of mediocrity, it really, it's probably South African rugby story of the year in terms of super rugby.
It is.
It is, definitely.
It is. Well, in the background here, here's the Lions just dismantling the Highlanders. Yeah. Oh, like, they got off to a really great start there.
Yeah.
But also, you know, people were thinking like the Lions were going to then climb up come playoff time. And
no, they didn't.
They just kept doing what they knew.
They expressed themselves. You know, you can see when a team is motivated, when it's happy, when it's well coached. And that Lions team had all of this. Seeing a Kiwi team being run off the field, run off the pitch with their own game plan. I mean, there was a try that I don't know if that's it, that where for 2 minutes the ball was in play.
Yeah.
But the South African team scored. That's not the script. Usually when a match is in play, when the ball is in play for an extended period of time, the Kiwi team always scores.
Yeah. Because always do when it gets open, exactly.
But our players, the Lions players, were fit and they had the skill.
But it's something that was being said earlier in that tournament. Just listen to that roar.
Oh man, I was at that end when Jaco Creel got that point. And I kissed one of my mates on his cheek. Longer than was necessary, but that's another story.
That's what good rugby does.
Yeah.
People were saying earlier on, you know, that the Lions are playing New Zealand rugby and beating New Zealand teams.
Yes.
And they did it all the way through. Yes. In the process, though, they took two heavy defeats during league play. First against
the Hurricanes,
and then against the Crusaders. They obviously righted the wrongs of the Crusaders. But then there was a controversial, should they go to the Jaguars with full strength? I mean, it's still to this day. We're not getting into that debate now because what's happened has happened. At the time, I thought, you know, it's not a terrible call because, what can take away from them might mean they might lose in the quarters. But then again, people are saying, yeah, but you're going to play the Sharks in the quarters. This is as good as a gimme. But when it comes down to these things, and I think, again, it's the role of the media. We're very opinionated.
Sure.
Johan Ackerman was with these guys for years and years. I think he has a pretty good understanding.
He knows.
So when it comes to a coin toss, which I believe it was back then, you got to go with what the coach is doing. Okay, it didn't pay off.
They basically went
to the Cake Tin, and it was your usual horrible Wellington day.
Yeah, and they got done. I mean,
the rain and all that kind of stuff. Look, the Hurricanes should have won Super Rugby in 2015.
Yes.
There's no doubt about that. Okay. The guys realized, well, hang on a second, guys. Look, we can't just walk through this thing because that's the way they play. But it was almost like fate was going to go, okay, cool, you can have this one because there was only one team in that final. It really was.
When you look at the rise of, I mean, since the Crusaders. The Crusaders are not regressed. The Chiefs, the Highlanders, and the Hurricanes have improved immeasurably. Yeah. And
they used to play...
The problem with those teams was they used to play basketball.
Mm.
They used to play basketball, sexy rugby, hardly any forwards involved, score a try with 15 men involved in a move, but...
Basically the Blues.
Yes. But then I think that's where the transformation came when they got in... These teams got in... Coaches like your John Plumtrees and Jamie Josephs, who won teams that have got good forward packs, good strong set pieces, and a good kicking game.
Structures.
Oh, I mean, Kiwi players, I believe, are the most skillful on the planet. So if you can discipline them, you have the finished product. And lo and behold, in the past 4 years, the Hurricanes, the Highlanders, and the Chiefs have won Super League because they tightened their game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they just had something they can build on each year rather than just throwing caution to the wind.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a shame to see that, you know, a little bit of pressure gets applied to the Lions and then they did capitulate. And then we saw it with players like Junchies and Faf de Klerk. I mean, on their day, we saw what they could do on the Highfelds and all the way through the season. And we thought that'd be really great if they could take that to the box because we need to run. And again, the pressure, the margins got cut down.
Sure,
and it was Super Rugby final over again. So that was it. Super Rugby Champions, the Hurricanes. Now, Yeah, look, the show is just about reviewing this year. It's not about going into next year. So sure. As a Stormers fan, I think we just write it off. That's it.
Hurricanes won. Look, the Stormers' chance to win Super Rugby was blown a few seasons.
In 1998 against the Highlanders.
99. And those 3 years in which they went to the semifinals and 1 year to the final in 2010, 2011, that was a golden opportunity and it was blown. I don't think
they've actually had quite a few.
Yes. They've got the worst playoff record in Super Rugby.
Worse than the Sharks.
No, they've got a horrible.
Sharks have played in the most finals without getting victory.
The Stormers have only won one playoff match in their history. One. So, yeah.
So, getting on to the Six Nations then. Kevin, you are full of insights, huh?
Six Nations, it's not the kind of rugby that I enjoy, but I try to indulge.
I'm just going to rein you in time-wise. I mean, the hour's going to be up. We're going to be halfway through thing. So, Six Nations, like I said in the top of the show, Stuart Lancaster was in charge of the English, and they could only ever really finish second.
Yeah.
That was obviously a big part about Ireland was so good for such a long stage. Wales were pretty handy. So, it was tough. It really was. Ireland kind of plateaued a bit this last year. Wales also had their, players coming to end their career kind of thing.
Yes.
Scotland and Italy
will never
win Six Nations, I think, because they haven't got the team. They haven't got the resources. Yeah. They can't maintain intensity for the long period. Scotland are doing pretty well right now. I reckon the Scots could probably beat the Box, but that's neither here nor there.
Georgia would beat the Box.
It is a fair point. And then we've got France who... Again, this is a show in itself about how infuriated those guys must be about why they can't do anything. Like, the club system is not enough French players. The argument will always go on.
I don't think they're asked about national rugby, to be honest. They're very inward-looking. I don't think they care about the national team. I don't think so. With the amount of foreigners, because those foreigners, think about it, they're actually blocking off up-and-coming young French players from, playing for the good teams, your Toulons and so on. You need good friends, good young players at your main teams in France, not on the outskirts, your Pauls or Grenobles and whatever. No, not going to work.
Yeah, so going into that, Eddie Jones was very confident right from the start that he was going to do great things with that team. People have been saying, he obviously inherited good structures, which he really did, and there's no doubt about that. But the guy just seemed like he was up for it right from the start, to quote a cliche.
Very good.
Enjoyable discussions since then.
So this is some guy in a suit basically introing Eddie, but you can just tell this is his first sort of press conference where he's arriving there with a pound in his eyes.
Look, the devastation that many people connected to Western Province Rugby felt when he did a U-turn. I don't blame him. It's about financial security.
Professional.
You just knew that the Stormers had lost a very good coach there, and that whoever was going to pick him up was going to succeed. He's just a good coach. He's a very good coach. And in modern sports, more than ever before, good coaches are modern sports, not modern rugby. Modern sports, you need good coaches in team sport. And,
exactly, because there's so many different demands. Yes, and again, it's about maintaining intensity. So here's Eddie, first moment in the job.
Firstly, I'd just like to thank Ian and Bill for the opportunity to coach England.
He looks smug too.
A very exciting opportunity.
He always looks smug.
Hugely talented team. England have won two of the last three under-20s World Cups. So
there we go. That's a very important point there.
It's a great opportunity to catch these players. And obviously the team plays at Twickenham, which is a fantastic stadium that's full of enthusiastic supporters. So I'm looking forward to the project ahead of us.
So the reason I play this for you now, the interview took place November 2015, so that's not even this year. But the thing is, he got there and he knew. When playing at Twickenham, people don't actually put a lot of emphasis on this.
Yes.
It is a real bonus. You've got a home stadium. It's your fortress.
Yeah, bro.
You can set up the cameras to track your players. Uh-huh. It's familiarity. It's a place that everyone aspires to go to. It's a really big deal.
Yeah.
Now, another thing was that he brought up the whole youth system. And we haven't got time, unfortunately, to go into the under-20 World Cups for this review show. Basically, it's another tournament that the Springboks aren't winning right now. But he knew he's got a decent enough existing structure. The guys in that World Cup weren't terrible. They just didn't click. That's all.
Yeah.
They've got a good club system because they're also of the opinion that if you're going to play for England, you must play in England.
Thank you.
To be part of that team. So Eddie went there going, guys, I've actually got this pretty good.
Yes.
All I need to do is just basically talk some sense into these guys to unleash their potential.
Properly and
And just from that press conference alone, you could just see it. Like, I'm a good wicketer.
I felt a sense of dread. I was like, here we go with it. An Australian who wants to prove a point, and naturally, what's better than to coach an English team to the heights of world rugby?
And it is.
When he caught me, when he said, they've won two of the last three under 20 World Cups, which is now three of the last four because they won this year.
Yep.
It said a lot because now he also had a very good and enthusiastic batch of youngsters coming through in every and they're being exposed because I think there's a limitation on the amount of foreigners allowed in English rugby because they want English boys playing at the highest level and it's now transferring to Nash. They're going to stay there for a while. They're going to and until the Springboks, of course, get their act together.
Well, it is. It's going to become a two-horse race. We'll get into that later in the show.
Sure.
So look at the Six Nations, how they went about it. They had an opening game against Scotland, a little bit rusty. They won 15-9.
Yep.
They were away to Scotland.
Sure.
Then they were away to Italy. They won 40 points to 9.
Surprise, surprise.
And then with those two teams out of the way, they then had to really go for it, okay? Yeah. So then they beat Ireland 21-10. Tough game against Wales, 25-21 eventual winners there. Yeah. Then icing on the top, beating France 31-21. So they won it. Wales came second, Ireland third, Scotland fourth, France all the way down in a lowly fifth, and then Italy, Italy.
Yeah, well, but hey, they still beat us. Let's forget that.
Let's not jump the gun here. There's still lots to go. So that was your Six Nations, and it's difficult to see England kind of, unless there's lots and lots of injuries, the other teams now have to not only just be their best, they need to raise their game now. And this is a beautiful thing that we've seen in the Rugby Championship.
Yeah.
The only way you're going to win the Rugby Championship, if you can do something that New Zealand maybe hasn't done.
Yeah.
It's the same with Ireland, Wales, France, Scotland, Italy, whatever. They need to do something that England maybe aren't doing. And that is really good to have such like strong forerunners now. It's brilliant for rugby. I really do think so.
True, incredible.
Which then brings us on to, the Rugby Championship. Now, there's so much that can go into it with stats and all that kind of stuff. But all you can really say is that I think physically, psychologically, whatever you want to put it, New Zealand are just so head and shoulders. And people were saying, it's the best, greatest team. And I'm not ever going to dispute that because they have been so good for so long. Since late 2009, they've been the world's top team in the world rankings. Okay, since 2009, we were losing our shit because we managed to get it for like 10 months
For 10 years. Yeah. And we missed an opportunity. I mean, that end of year tour was an opportunity to cement in 2009, to cement our number one spot in the world. And we stuffed around. We stuffed around and it's never been the same since.
It was in the decline of the PW era.
Yeah.
So there's nothing more sort of definite than round six of Super Rugby, the Rugby Championship. Sorry, not round six. Sorry. I was just going to skirt through all my prep and basically say New Zealand are amazing, but there is something to point out here.
Yeah.
The Springboks threw, we'll do the Springboks section at the end here. So
yeah.
The Springboks threw Rugby Championship. They were so undecided what to do.
Yes.
There was the whole thing about playing rugby, running rugby.
Yeah.
It's like, do I pick my incumbents or do I go with the Lions? As you could see, I wasn't entirely sure what to go with. And even said now in hindsight, he said maybe his selections weren't right at the beginning because he had his various challenges. But then eventually when the box said, right, we're picking Mornay Steyn, it was one of those situations where it was, this is either a very good thing or a very bad thing.
It's going to work against somebody, but definitely not against the All Blacks.
So basically Mornay Steyn was brought in.
Yeah.
And I say it was brought in because it wasn't a hospital pass. It was a stopgap option.
Yep.
Elton John just wasn't working. Patrick Lambie was broken.
Yeah.
So they had needed him because Johan Coulson wasn't ever seen as a fly half.
Yeah.
So Mornay Steyn came in. He single-handedly kicked his way to a win for the box at Loftus.
What a boring game. I went there.
That was one of the most painful games of the year.
Game.
And everyone thought, okay, well, they've got the win because at this stage they had a horrible overseas trip. They lost to Argentina away. They lost everything away. And then everyone thought, okay, look, as long as they just get the win, they stop the rot, they got the win, now they can start building.
Yeah.
No, they didn't. They went to Durban.
I think we fooled ourselves into thinking that, the rot had been stopped.
Yeah.
And to think that we're 12-9 behind against the All Blacks and eventually lost 57-15. That they scored 45 points in the second half. 45.
Yeah,
13 the last... Oh.
I was in the stands that day and it was, who was this?
Oh, no. Look at it. Yeah. It was like watching a great college first team taking on like Bloemfontein High School's fourth team. The difference in quality between both those sides was very, very bare.
And it was like, when you play FIFA and you've got your friend's better than you are.
Yeah.
So you give them the fast team and then you end up playing with like, I don't know, Watford or something.
Yeah.
And your friend's got Real Madrid.
Yeah.
And the players were so much faster. Everything about them was quicker, stronger, more efficient. The passes went to hands.
Yes, we tried. Literally, I'm telling you right now, that Springbok performance would have been enough to beat other, average international sides. But at this level, it was not enough. It just was not enough. And I think the reality set in. The reality finally set in that we are in cuck.
We are in such cuck.
We are in cuck. Reality set in that day. And I said, you know what, this year could get worse. I believed it from the get-go that this year could get worse because now it shattered. It shattered these guys psychologically. Mentally, it's shattered them because, I mean, you know, you had players like, we had so many players on form going into that rugby championship. A lot of them were not given an opportunity. Some failed because, just bad coaching. Just a whole lot of existential factors. And from the highs of the Lions playing so well in Super Rugby, you've seen a lot of these, the very same Kiwi players that they were embarrassing in Super Rugby, smacking them like that. It was like, oh, man.
It was so frustrating to see when TJ Perenara scored that try, basically where he dribbled the ball a few times over the line. That maybe was a precursor to what kind of day it was going to be.
French referee.
There's enough of the French referees. These guys. But you could just see like the belief then they were a little bit slower to get behind the post after the tries, a little bit slower to get back to the halfway line. And Adrian Strauss, you know, who was the stopgap captain for the year, despite the fact that we found out later he had no intentions of going past 2016, which is also interesting. His body language was so, like, he was like, well, what do I do? Like, what can I possibly do? We're literally fighting against Thunder here. And that Thunder just kept coming and coming and coming. And as you say, that second half was one of the most embarrassing and scintillating performances you've ever seen.
That last 15 minutes when the Springboks gave up. They gave up. You saw them giving up.
Yep.
And when you see a Springbok team giving up against the old foe, I mean, it doesn't count as a rivalry anymore because they're so much better than us. But until such time that we're good enough to beat them. And to see them giving up and the body language of the players and, as you say, of the captain and of the coach. I mean, the coach is not even forlorn. I don't even think Alistair could see was understood what just happened, the significance of that moment. I don't think he did.
Yeah, it was kind of, I think, like being mugged, but you didn't see your perpetrators. It was just that quick.
Sure.
In a subway, in and out, and you're done.
Yeah.
So that was the Rugby Championship. Again, another title for New Zealand. They just seemed to have all of that. I'm pretty sure when they addition captains for New Zealand Rugby, they just see what it looks like when they raise their hand for the trophy. Because that's one of the things they do. Maybe it's a gym workout they do. Because all they ever do is they just lift trophies, these guys.
And if you notice, they never get tired of winning the Rugby Championship. They never get tired because, as Nick Mallett said it in that post-match, that the Rugby Championship is a true reflection of rugby superiority.
Yep.
The Rugby World Cup, okay, the All Blacks have finally cornered that market in the last two Rugby World Cups.
Again.
But you know what? The Rugby World Cup was just a lottery. You know, you can win a Rugby World Cup, yes, but you just need seven good performances in a row against
2007.
Yeah,
that point.
You just need seven good performances in a row. And in your group stage, you've got teams that are like ranked 12th, 13th, 20th, whatnot in the rankings. And you just need a good run and avoid a very good team in the playoffs.
Yep.
And you win it. Now, in Rugby Championship, you have to take on Australia, New Zealand, and Argentina, home and away.
Yeah,
there's nowhere to hide. There is nowhere to hide, and a lot of when we reflect on Heineke Meyer's coaching stint, he missed out on the Rugby Championship twice. There were some damaging defeats that he suffered against Australia away in 2014. And I think it was 2013 as well. And we were in the running to win those.
Completely.
So the fact that did we finish last season? I actually don't remember if we finished last or third.
I think we finished third because Argentina were somehow worse.
Yeah. And we finished last year, but it didn't count. So the fact that New Zealanders have placed so much emphasis on dominating and they want to come back and dominate, just to remind you that, you know what, we own you.
Yeah.
And I think that's the problem. When do you ever hear New Zealanders talking about, we're building for the World Cup? We're building for the World Cup. No, we want to dominate now. I want to be number one now for the rest of eternity.
But that's another thing this Rugby Championship showed us, is that when, I think they lost something like 700 caps from the World Cup final.
Yep.
And they somehow made the rugby better. It's because their structure is just so good. Everything about that team and understanding the players have, again, it's like the players all know what they're getting into. Mm-hmm. So if you're a guy like, what's that new center? Double barrel name.
Leonard Brown.
Okay, Leonard Brown, right? Yeah. If we were sat in the studio this time last year and I mentioned that name to you, we wouldn't have much to say, no. Right? Not a lot.
I think by the end of the rugby championship, he had about 5 caps, but he looked like he'd played for the All Blacks for 60.
Exactly.
He looked like he'd be there for 60.
It looked like Conrad Smith would ask for his autograph after the match. That's how entrenched the guy looked, because that's how good a team is. Ben, youngsters can come in like that.
Ben, when you see somebody like Malachi Fekitoa eating bench. No, not even bench. Stands. Malachi bloody Fekitoa. And that's when you know you are up against it. And remember, there was somebody else who couldn't... there was another centre who couldn't crack into the All Black team. Now, when you look at that quality, these guys would walk into other international squads.
The teams would be built around.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, man. Anton Leonard Brown, I think, was the story that needs more focus. That somebody... By the end of the rugby championship, he still had less than 10 caps, but he looked like he'd been there for years.
Yeah.
It says a lot.
It really was. It does. It says a lot about that team.
Yeah.
Which then moves on to the Currie Cup. And we mentioned at the start of the show, the Currie Cup was basically the Cheetahs. They went in there. And I actually remember chatting to Nick Mallard about this. I'm not name dropping. It's just that this is... it came back to me after a golf day. And he said, you know, it's a bunch of men playing around, giving some kids a clap week in, week out, because that's what a lot of teams were left with.
This is what the Currie Cup amounts to nowadays. Whoever has the least of the best teams in the country, their best unions, whoever has the least players in the Springboks is going to win it. That's just how it is. Yeah.
And they get to stay out on a shiny summer's day with Hugh Bladen in the background.
Uncle Hugh.
Come on his way with the drop kick.
And this Currie Cup final. They played the Bulls off the park. It was not close.
Well, see, the thing about the Cheetahs is they played the Bulls off the park, as you say, but the week prior to that, they beat the Lions 55-17. Okay, this was a very different Lions.
Exactly.
And this is a Lions team didn't have momentum of going through a season of clapping all the kids with these grown men.
Because all the good players were away, losing with the Springboks.
From the very first move here, the Cheetahs are running it. They're running it with purpose. We are not even in the first minute, and they've already got the other side of the field. The way these guys played was so encouraging. Of course, Currie Cup, there's lost a lot more space.
Yeah.
The way they were unlocking talents like Sergio Peterson, running. Sergio Peterson in that semi-final in the Currie Cup, you thought, you know what, if this guy could just be nurtured, developed, and properly put into a BOC team, he will be an international superstar. But then you got a guy like Neil Maria, he was pretty solid as their fly-off. Mm-hmm. Their forward pack was dominant.
Yeah, it really was, yeah.
Kasim was man of the match in this Currie Cup final. Francois Fenter as the captain, he was amazing. Blomkies?
Clayton.
I think that guy is a real talent going forward. If nothing else, this Currie Cup unearthed the fact that we definitely have the backs that need to be used properly. Clayton Blomkies for me, booming, massive, huge boot.
Exactly.
So if you've got a guy who's conservative like Alistair Garcia, who goes, yeah, well, you know, we need Johan Kirsten's boot to the back. This Clayton Blomkies was punching the ball 60, 65 meters per touch. Step like you have no idea. Offloads like he's doing it in his sleep.
Yeah.
It was something to see. So there was talent. If that alone, the Currie Cup taught us that there was talent.
Yes. And, you know, you should have seen most of the tries of the week compilations that I witnessed from this year's Currie Cup. There were at least 2 cheaters' tries because, man, those things were aesthetically beautiful. They played some very nice rugby.
And they were just so good.
Yeah, they were so good. We were not surprised. We were not surprised that they were going to win the Currie Cup. Some of us called it that, you know what, the cheaters are going to that final at the least. And
you're betting on the handicap they're going to win by 12
exactly.
or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the Currie Cup, which then gets us into the sevens. Ooh. Now the sevens, well, it was again, it was just Fiji really. The Blitzboks.
No, I disagree.
The Blitzboks had opportunities, never took them. New Zealand as a team, they had no players left.
The Blitzboks had so many opportunities to win this.
Yeah.
There were so many finals, unnecessary losses in the semis, in the finals, and I think that the points differential at the end of the season was 10 points between number 1 and number 2, and all it needed was for them to be composed. There was a final we lost in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
I get that one. That was where I think the series was gone, because we should have clapped those cues. We should have.
Well, Hong Kong being a sort of bogey tournament for the Blitzboks, they always seem to
never won it before.
It's so strange. A team that's so prolific all the way around the world in all conditions.
And lest we forget that travesty of justice in Wellington last year. Was it last year or this year?
Where it was the New Zealand Eights.
Yeah, oh, man. That ref, oh, okay. You know what? For a change, a South African could moan about that. That referee was bent.
No, it was terrible.
He was bent.
But the thing is, the Fijians, they were the composed team. So they went on, and whenever they got the opportunity, they kind of took it. And like they were just so good like that again.
Yeah, composure.
Great, great coach, great management, and they had the composure. Our guys, we know that we've got the talent in the game players. Yes. It's just, I love watching this team, and everyone does.
I think the only problem, with the upcoming season, the only thing they'll need to do, as we said, composure.
Yeah.
Ruthlessness. Don't play with your food. And the way in which they dismantled everybody, we already know that there's a pace setter. Everybody now knows that there's a pace setter. It's the blitz box, and everybody's going to raise their game. We just hope that the blitz box can weather that storm and continue winning in Cape Town, because, you know.
But I almost think that with a season like they had in 2016,
yes.
It's going back to the Hurricanes example again.
Sure.
There was a team that had opportunities to win Super Rugby.
Yes.
They somehow managed to fluff it. Because, I mean, as great as the Highlanders were in 2015,
sure.
I think they were lucky. So now with the Blitzbox at the back of a season like they had, this is why I think they are the favourites for this year.
So somebody was saying, one of the commentators in Dubai is saying that it feels as if the Springboks, the Blitzbox underachieved in Rio.
Yeah.
They should have been in the final at the least, and to witness Great Britain getting we all knew that Great Britain did not have what it takes to take on Fiji.
They had a couple of weeks to prepare. It was a throne to get the team, basically, of England and a couple of other
exactly.
accents.
So, that we missed out on a silver medal at the least, but yeah, it is what it is. We care. At least they won something.
Well, they won something. Yeah. So they ended up with the bronze.
Bronze, yep.
And Fiji, they went to the tournament as favourites. And the greatest moment in Fijian sport, there it was.
Yeah.
Gold medalists.
And the image that will lost for me was how they received their medals. They got down onto their knees and they received the medals from the dignitaries. And I was like, these people are very humble. And you cannot think of nicer people. I would have had them. Or the Blitzbox winning that goal and nobody else. And
yeah. But it was Fiji are a sevens team,
yes.
and that's what they're known for. But yet they somehow became one of the highlights of the Olympics,
yes.
because they really did embody the Olympic spirit like very few could ever even imagine. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
And the fact that it was I couldn't believe that it was actually their first ever gold medal. And like, wow, at least which is satisfying because it's a sport that they excel in. Mm-hmm. And to see that sport delivers a gold medal for Fiji, with recent troubles, like in recent years, they've had troubles that we won't go into. But yeah, we're very happy for them.
Yeah, it was a nice addition to the rugby as well, because we all love the sevens. And the World Series is always great.
Yeah.
The fact that we could be part of the Olympics, it was such a great vibe in that purpose-built stadium.
Exactly.
It was always a nice thing to watch, in contrast to all the other stuff.
I think that was the most, without even competition, that was the most successful of all the new sports. I mean, it's a hit. It's a
totally.
Hit. Yeah.
And it's going to stick.
Sure.
So that leads us into the sort of business end, the final part of the show. And, we've been through the international. Mm-hmm. To just touch on it there. New Zealand were amazing this year. They won everything except for a strange game in America,
mm-hmm.
where there were no doubt. They just got the record of 18 test consecutive wins. The media were no doubt pulling them apart. And they had a very plucky Irish side who just seemed to know what they were doing. And they won that one. So New Zealand finished the end of the year number one in the world, okay?
Yep.
Like I said, they've been here since late 2009.
Sure.
England finished second because they were the only unbeaten team this year.
Yep.
They are now on 14 wins, 13 wins this year, consecutive wins. Australia, well, they were up and down, but they had a pretty plucky, decent end-of-year tour. I know they lost two games.
They stirred, yeah.
But still, I mean, they did push Ireland all the way. Ireland not that bad. England, by pulling away from Australia the way they did, just show that it's them and New Zealand in the world, and then it's the rest.
Even though from what I've noticed, what I picked up, Jakob Paper is not held in high regard after the way he handled that game. I wouldn't know, but apparently...
Or the game before that.
Oh, yeah.
He had a double header of crap.
Oh, yeah.
He really did. So that's your top three world ranking-wise for the end of the year. Ireland in fourth, full credit for that. Wales, by beating SA in their last match, go to fifth. SA now at sixth. We have been this low before.
No. The lowest we've ever been was fifth. under Strolley, Rudolf Strolley. I remember that horror tour of 2000.
We dropped under sixth before. I think that's where, I stand to be correct. Yeah. It's not worth discussing now. But so we're down all the way at sixth. Now, to not be in the top five in the world, I think there's some people who are sweating in boardrooms as we speak and will do for quite some time. This isn't something where one meeting, basically, everyone's like, well, guys, we've got to pull our socks up. There are so many different things, and we're not going to get into this show. There are so many different role players involved in the box being number six. It's not about being worse than five other teams. It's about a lot of business on top of all that. Seventh, we've got Scotland, who showed great form towards the end. I mean, who knows? They might even get a runner-up spot in the Six Nations at some stage.
They'll cause trouble. They're going to cost somebody a super, the Six Nations next. I'm expecting them to.
Yeah. France at eight, well, they're languishing and they don't seem to know what they're doing.
They don't care.
And they always wear a different jersey. I can never work that one out. Argentina, that's interesting for me because they're a decent side, but they're all the way down in ninth. Now,
they did have a...
It's a tough school, this rugby championship, when it's your first sort of proper...
Yeah.
Look, it's exactly what Italy's in. Italy needs more rugby competitions. They get put in the Six Nations against everyone is better than them.
Sure.
Argentina, the same thing happened in the beginning. Everyone was better than them. Box are doing their utmost to make that level. But it's very, very difficult to build momentum because you are in the back foot the whole time.
Sure.
So they're a handy side when it comes to World Cups, but ranked all the way down in ninth right now, it's not a fair reflection, I think, of where they are.
Yeah.
But it's just been disappointing. Yeah. And then Fiji bring up the top 10.
Which is good.
Well, Italy, as far as being box killers, they lost to Tonga the very next week, so they're still down there in 13. You know, Italy losing to Tonga might have actually been one of the most depressing Springbok results.
I think that's it got more traction than any other result in South Africa and abroad. They're like, hang on, those guys beat the Springboks, so what the hell are they doing losing to Tonga? But when I watched that game, Tonga was much better than Italy, and kind of brought that reality home to the Springboks that we were shit against Italy.
Well, I think learning that result about 10 minutes before the Welsh game, that's when it was like, okay, all bets are off, I'm out of here. So let's just have a quick little scan through here, and then Kev, if you can just close this out with just some thoughts on this box setup right now. So I started in June, like I said. Alistair Garcia was given the job, didn't have a lot of time to kind of prepare this team. He went in there, had some overseas players who looked very much off the mark. Pat Lambie was out of the team in about 10 minutes. And at the same time, the Irish were down to 14 men, and CJ Sander was sent off for the incident that caused Lambie's concussion. But they went down 26-20 to 14 players. That was not good. They then went to Johannesburg, played a first half that was so diabolical that the home crowd booed the Springboks off the field. They ended up coming back in the end, so very spirited comeback. They won that one 32-26, and then down in PE the week after, a pretty limp performance again. If it wasn't for some heroic defense by Fafter Klerk in particular, the smallest guy in the Bok team, they might have lost that one too. So they started off the year with a 2-1 June's National Series win over Ireland, and it was a very much understrength Irish team.
Yes, that's a
problem. We can make no bones about that. They then really scraped, dug deep, and managed to somehow beat Argentina 30-23 at Mombella Stadium. From there, they went to Argentina, and in what was, again, a terrible performance by the Boks, they were just trying their hardest to get Morned staying in the pocket for a drop goal. Didn't work. They lost for the first time in Argentina 26-24. They then went to Australia and in Brisbane. Didn't do too badly for some stages.
They should have won that game.
They really should have won that game. But as what happens currently, recently, 23-17, they went down to Australia. Then they went to Christchurch. And again, there was parts of that first half that played with a lot of spark, a lot of pizzazz, a lot of purpose. But they ended up losing that one 41-13. Then it was into the home series. And they picked Mornay Steyn and they hope for all hell they can get a lot of penalties. Penalties they got. They got six of them. 18, yes. They got six, So Mornay Steyn wins, obviously multiples of three. They beat Australia 18-10, and that Australian team looked down in the dumps.
Yep.
And we thought, maybe there's something, maybe. And then New Zealand said, no, there's nothing here. 57-15. New Zealand just beat South Africa. So then it was off to the end of year tour in the Northern Hemisphere where some players could get a run, other players could prove their worth and show us good see all the faith that he's put in them. Well, they drew 31 all with the Barbarians team with a very much experimental Bok team, so not too much is drawn into that. It was then into the Twickenham match where Alistair Garcia picked the heaviest forward pack they could possibly think of which didn't do much for anyone's purposes, really. And the English, they were very rusty in the beginning. Didn't have a great game, but they still won 37-21. It's still a big, big result that. Mm-hmm. Then they went to Italy to go regain some confidence, but instead they just embarrassed themselves even more. 2018, they lost to the Italians. The Italians had a try disallowed towards the end for a foot and touch. It could have been a whole lot worse.
Yeah.
And then it was the final match of the season, 27-13, to a Welsh side that had just beaten Japan the week before.
Just
by 3 points, yes, with a late drop goal. So, Kevin, as we wrap up the show today, obviously people have been talking about this decline. There's other words, other shorter words as well to use. But just from your point to finish us off here, what is it that we need to address? Because we need to consolidate the points at play here so that we know in 2017, first, we're not going to make the same mistakes. Mm-hmm. And secondly, we can actually build on the learning process of what 2016 has been. So what for you are the real key factors that we need to focus on? And focus
talking about
just on
the Springboks as a whole or just South African rugby?
I think SA rugby right now maybe is a little bit too broad. But just, I mean, look, put it this way. SA rugby has to be strong for the Boks to work because they are kind of intertwined. Yeah. So just Bok-wise, if you can finish up with that.
Bok-wise, I still think that no matter how badly things are going, a strong coaching setup, that Springbok team requires good coaches. You know, I think we all felt it when it was announced, when Alistair's assistants were announced in April this year. We were like, a guy who's coached at under 19 Currie Cup level, somebody who didn't really spot, and then there was somebody else like Johan van Gaan who didn't really sparkle as a coach under Heineke Meyer.
No, but he was just retained.
Yeah, he just retained. When you looked at that coaching setup looked weak. It just looked weak. I felt that Alistair needed stronger people around him. And I still think, and obviously there are rumors that are swirling all over the place that, hey, somebody from New Zealand or somebody from France or whatever country could coach the Springboks. But I think that Alistair Coetzee's race is run. I just don't feel that he owns that hot seat. Just the way he speaks as well, he doesn't look sad. You know, when you lose the way the Springboks have been losing, I would be forlorn or I would be pissed off or there would be some kind of emotion. But Alistair's just matter-of-factly, oh, we lost dog day in my career. We'll find a solution. We'll come back next week and whatnot. But I still think that we need a good set of coaches there. Whether there are people who want to take a drink from that poison chalice is another story altogether. Who wants to coach the Springboks when you think about the broader picture?
You got to think expectations are relatively low. You can only go up. But I mean, I agree with you. I think this race is run. It's kind of like when you write a car off.
Yeah.
You can fix it to a certain degree with a certain mechanic, but you don't want to drive that again. I think Alistair's, he can't evoke inspired thoughts or determined actions on the basis of what happened now.
Yeah.
4 wins out of 12.
Let me tell you something. It did not end well for him at the Stormers. The past 2013, 2014, 2015 were failures. And what underpinned the failure was a regression.
Yeah.
So Alistair did not left under a cloud already and he went to Japan. So already his credit had taken a beating. His CV might have qualified him from the Springbok job, but momentum he did not have as a coach. He definitely did not have the momentum or the credit to take on that Springbok job. I'm an idealist, and I thought, Alistair Coetzee, maybe it's an opportunity for him to redeem himself in the eyes of us Stormers fans. But I can't say we're surprised that it went the way it did just because of his. I mean, you keep hearing that he's a nice guy, a good human being, but because we keep coaching Nick Mallet, do you want a nice guy or do you want somebody who's going to tell these people up front, you know, this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You either do it my way or you go.
Yeah, well, I think it was so succinctly put to a guy who doesn't actually do English very well. Victor Matfield was on the SuperSport panel, which is something I've been monitoring all the way through because you get some great insights back of the fact that these guys, they are as frustrated as all the fans are. They just put things quite well. Victor Matfield basically said, we need someone that's just going to grab this thing by the horn, so to speak.
And
really shake it up and actually just let it sink in what what it means to lose like this, what it means to be this bad. It can't happen. It can't be one of those things like, it's all right, guys, we'll give it better next week. Yeah.
We need a hard bastard there. Yeah. Just a bastard of a coach and somebody who can play the political game very well. If he can play his politics because, you know, there's the external pressures, if he can manage those, but at the same time, succeed, put systems in place that will make him succeed as a coach, we will succeed. But then who is out there in South Africa? Who can you point to?
Mm.
Because people kept saying, Johan Ekman, I don't want Johan Ekman to leave the Lions. No, I want him to keep building.
Exactly.
I want him to build on, create a dynasty. He must create a dynasty at Ellis Park so that we have a strong pillar in South African rugby that we can work around.
So true.
At the most, he should be a consultant. There are many names for people who've left our shores to go look for more gentle climbs to succeed as rugby coaches. If we can somehow convince them to come back or look within. I mean, there are people who are not coaching at the moment who you think, you know, this guy could make a very good Springbok coach or
sure.
an assistant. But it's all, that's now the ball is in Saru's court. On that, they have to, whatever decision they take now, they have to take responsibility for it, and it must be for the good of South African rugby.
So true. Okay, but you bring up two brilliant points then, and I will close out on this, is that there needs to be a position where the next Springbok coach is going to succeed. And if Alistair Coetzee, with his failings, learnings from this year, is then going to be put into an advisory role, whatever it must be, we've got to take all of this. This embarrassment is 2016. Yeah. We've got to take all of this. Be good in life. There's no failures, only lessons.
Sure, sure.
We've got a lot of lessons. We were given lessons in bulk, and we've definitely saved on lessons this year.
Is there a will to learn?
That's exactly. The problem. That's another thing is, so we got to get those things. And only then will a coach make a difference, I think. So, look, the answers are all over because the questions are endless. So, a little bit here and there.
Yeah.
The point is that rugby's too big a game. There's too big of a commercial thing in this country for it to fall through its arse like it has. So, big changes have got to be made and responsibilities be taken. Kevin, thanks so much for your time. This hour has absolutely flown by.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, man.
Where can we find you on, say, Twitter or social media so we can catch up with your insights?
My handle is Kevin_MC. Kevin_MC. We can chat because I'm. If you follow me, I express myself.
Oh, you've done as much here as well.
Yes. So if you want to chat. From time to time, I'll contribute an article on Vodacom's rugby page, just an opinion piece. I'll usually let you know when those come out because I just have to vent. At some point, I have to vent, yeah.
Cool. Kevin, thanks so much for your time. That has been your big rugby review for 2016. Sure. The cricket one's up next. And if you think this was fiery in places, well, wait till we get the cricket one. Got a great panel for you. It's been an up and down year for cricket. It'll certainly be more positive than this one. Thanks so much for joining us. CliffCentral.com.